Okay, it's good to see everybody, and here we are. Direct from North Carolina. Okay, we will, let me just set this thing right now. Okay, so we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava. Welcome to the Bhagavad Gita study group. So, Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari, Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi jana balaba giri badadhauti. Gopi jana balaba giri badadhauti. Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Yamuna tira vanachari, Yamuna tira vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Viharuti, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi jana malaba giri badadhauti. Gopi jana malaba giri badadhauti. Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Yamuna tira Banachari, Yamuna Tira, Banachari, Jaya Radha Madhuva, Kunja Vihari, Jaya Radha Madhuva, Kunja Vihari, Jai Om Vishnupad. Paramahansa Paravitkacharya, also Teta, Satishi Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chanana, Vakmananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anandagoti Vaishnav Vrindagajai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Pramasekaho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindagajai, Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopagopata Saim Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gopadan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai, Jagannathaswami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai, Srimati Lasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindagajai, Gaur Krivananda Hari Hari. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. Hari 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 Om. So, Omagana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. So now we will continue with our Gita study. So we are reading from the Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter. Text 14 is the next text. Let me move this out of the way. All right, and this is another famous text. Okay, let's go. So, Daivi hi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mama eva ye prapajante mayam etam tarantite. So, Daivi, transcendental, he certainly, esha this gunamai, consisting of the three modes of material nature, mama, my, maya, energy, duratyaya, very difficult to overcome, mam, unto me, eva certainly, yea, those who, prapajante, surrender, mayam etam, this illusory energy, taranti, overcome, te, they. Translation. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So here we're referring to, or Krishna's referring to, his illusory energy, the material energy, which is an expansion of the spiritual energy. And as the comparison goes that I utilized, I think it was yesterday, it's like the prison house. So it's very difficult to escape from prison. In fact, this is a prison house, this material world. You cannot escape from until you get a pardon. It's like Sing Sing, that's an old prison that none of you would remember. Anyway, so it's like a perfect prison, because why is it a perfect prison? Because the prisoners don't think that they're prisoners. That's the funniest thing. Can you imagine a prisoner that doesn't think he's in prison, but he's actually in prison and he's tied up with a ball and chain? And that's our situation. As Krishna says in the Gita, that we are controlled by the three modes of nature. Nahikaschit chanamapi chatatishtati akarmakrit karyate yavasakarma sarvaprakriti. That everyone is forced to act helplessly. So it's literally the ball and chain that's controlling us, telling us to eat this, go after that girl, go after that boy, do this, do that. And we're thinking, I'm free. That's the great illusion. So how are you going to overcome something when you don't know that you're actually trapped by it? That's really hard. If you can't identify the bars in your prison house, if you can't identify the things that are actually holding you, and you think you're free, you won't be able to overcome it. That's the first point. And even if you could identify it, it's just too strong. As described here in this verse, Daiva yeshu gunamaya mamamaya durachaya. It's impossible to overcome. But if you get a pardon from the Supreme Lord, I mean, just like, oh my God, more politics. Just like here in the United States, you got some real bad criminals, but they happen to help, oh my God, they happen to help someone in power who shall remain nameless, and they're getting pardoned. That's pretty amazing, because they're buddies with another criminal. Oh no, they're buddies with someone in power. So if we're buddies with Krishna, I'm not saying that we can get away with murder, because Krishna won't permit that either. Because someone who's actually buddies with Krishna will actually do what Krishna wants. But even if we were sentenced to a long time due to our previous karma, by chanting the holy names, we can become buddies with Krishna, and Krishna writes down that pardon. Please pardon so-and-so. And this material energy looks at the pardon and says, all right, your pardon. You can leave, but sometimes people who are pardoned, they don't want to leave, even in the mundane prison house. Because in the mundane prison, at least they have the security of, as they say, three square meals a day, medical help, you know, bed, and actually some of the prisons are like country clubs. You know, it's not a bad life, except you don't have freedom. So some of the prisoners don't want to get out. In the same way, even though we chant the holy names, do we actually want to get out of here? When it comes time, do we actually want to leave this world and go back to the spiritual world? I doubt it. So that's the problem. Krishna pardons us, but, you know, no, I just want to stay. Anyway, let's continue with this particular purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all of these energies are divine. Although the living entities are part of his energies and are therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, their original superior power is covered. That's us. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, and we ask for it, don't blame matter, their illusion is also eternal. Eternal in this sense, that it's so long that it seems like forever. And so the conditioned soul, actually, that's exactly what I was going to say what Prabhupada says here. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nitya Bada, or eternally conditioned. And Prabhupada says, no one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. Inferior material energy is defined herein as divine, due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. Being conducted by divine will, material nature, although inferior, acts so wonderfully in the construction and destruction of the cosmic manifestation. The Vedas confirm this as follows: Mayam tu prakritim vidyan, mayinam tu maheshwaram. Although maya, illusion, is false or temporary. Now, let me just explain what that means. That maya does exist. Maya is not absolutely false, but sometimes considered false because the covering of a particular person is temporary. So remember the verse where we said that temporary things in this world, in one sense, are considered unreal. But it's not that maya technically is false, but our being in maya, or identifying with this material energy, is the false identification. The background of maya is the supreme magician, the supreme personality of Godhead, or the personality of Godhead, who is Maheshwara, the supreme controller. That's from the Shveta Svatara Upanishad. Another meaning of guna. Now, guna refers to the modes of nature in this verse. So, Prabhupada says, another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be held by a person who is unbound. Common sense. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna, or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service of Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of the illusory energy, can order this insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul, and out of his paternal affection for the living entity, who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of material, of the stringent material nature. Only means. The word mam eva are also significant. Mam means unto Krishna, Vishnu only, and not Brahma or Shiva. Although Brahma and Shiva are greatly elevated and almost on the level of Vishnu, it is not possible for such incarnations of Rajoguna, that's the passionate mode, and Tamaguna, ignorance, to release the conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya. In other words, both Brahma and Shiva are also under the influence of Maya. Only Vishnu is the master of Maya, therefore he alone can give release to the conditioned soul. The Vedas, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.8, confirm this in the phrase Tam Eva Viditva, or freedom is possible only by understanding Krishna. Even Lord Shiva affirms that liberation can be achieved only by the mercy of Vishnu. Lord Shiva says, Mukti Pradata Sarvesham Vishnu Eva Lasamsheha. There's no doubt that Vishnu is the deliverer of liberation for everyone. So it's interesting. I just heard an amazing story, which I'll tell. So it's very interesting that Vishnu, Krishna, and the spiritual master are making all sorts of plans to liberate the conditioned soul. And somehow or other, they are able in many instances to trick someone to take up Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's ultimately up to the person to accept Krishna consciousness or not accept Krishna consciousness. You know, that's individual free will. But they are making plans. So basically, it's the holy names and the mercy of a pure devotee that can liberate us. Because in order to please Krishna, one has to have love. Love is not given by Krishna, or bhakti is not given by Krishna. It's given by Krishna's pure devotee. And I'll tell you a very interesting story that I just heard. You know, I'm listening to Prabhupada Memories. And some of you may have heard this story before. It's a story of, now listen to the name, it's a story of Pigpen. Very interesting story. So here's the story of Pigpen. You know, normally you think of Pigpen as a very dirty place where pigs reside. So there's a person whose name was Pigpen. Okay. So once upon a time, and this story was told by Indradyumna Maharaj, once upon a time, the devotees heard a knock on the door in the temple. This is in France. Knock, knock, knock. And there's a very dirty person who hadn't bathed for like God knows how long. He was there at the door and it smelled real bad. And he said, food, food. I want food. Okay. So they gave him some prasadam and they thought, hope he doesn't come in the temple. He smells really bad. Okay. So then the devotees are out on a walk sometimes in Paris, and this person sometimes pops out of the bushes. You know, he's living in the bushes. He's a street person, homeless, etc. We don't use the word bum anymore because that's a pejorative. So anyway, so he pops out of the bushes and says, food, and they keep giving him prasadam. Okay, keep giving him prasadam. So then, fast forward, one day, Srila Prabhupada arrives in Paris. You know, really nice. And so they're going on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. And as they're going on a morning walk, past these bushes, this, who they call Pigpen, jumps out of and tries to grab Prabhupada's feet. And so now he knew that's where the mercy is, at the feet of the pure devotee. So anyway, so he tries to grab Prabhupada's feet and they just push him away. Okay. So he gets pushed away. Devotees head back to the temple, and they notice when they get back to the temple, the door's open. They left the door open by mistake. And they come into the temple room with Prabhupada. Prabhupada sits down, and lo and behold, there's this, you know, pig pen there in the temple, and he runs up to Prabhupada and grabs Prabhupada's feet, and everyone is thinking, oh my God, how did we allow this to happen? And then they go to grab him, and then, but then they see that Prabhupada is patting this boy on the head and says, yes, everything will be all right. Everything will be all right. Everything will be all right. And they think, this is some sort of pastime. I mean, it's, Prabhupada is really paticca pavana. He's exhibiting this. So there's class, and the boy sits down there in class. He can't pronounce anything. You know, just like, and they go, and they don't know what to do with him. But, you know, finally they see that he's able to clean the temple. So they put him to work cleaning the temple, you know, even though he can't pronounce. Starts chanting Hare Krishna, but, you know, it's really hard. You know, can't even pronounce anything completely. I guess his brain was just completely wiped out with drugs. All right, so he continues. And then what happens is that one day the devotees, including Shraduni Maharaj, are getting ready to go on traveling Sankirtan. So there's the band, you're sitting in the band. And then Shraduni Maharaj goes to the van and he sees in the passenger seat there's Pigpen. And he says, Pigpen, just go back. He calls it Pigpen, I guess. What an insult. Just go back to the temple, you know, it says. And Pigpen keeps saying, as he has said before, Prabhupada save me, Prabhupada save me. And, you know, he's able to pronounce that and say that. Prabhupada save me, Prabhupada save me. Okay. So that's, you know, that's his mantra, Prabhupada save me. He's chanting at that time. He says, all right, you can go out with us and maybe clean the Sankirtan van. All right, so they arrive at the Sankirtan place that they're going to distribute books. And when they arrive there, they decide to eat prasadam. And Pigpen, he says, give me some books. And they give him books and a book bag, you know, but what is he going to do? You know, they send him out with a book bag. And in the meantime, they're eating prasadam and talking and, you know, resting a little bit before going out in Sankirtan. Then Pigpen comes back and his book bag is empty, completely empty. And they find out that he had sold all those books. And they said to him, what? What did you do? What did you say to people? And he said, I just simply said, Prabhupada save me, Prabhupada save me. That was his whole mantra. And he was, you know, how French people are very sophisticated, and they're just hearing Prabhupada save me, Prabhupada save me. And they were taking books because of the purity and the dedication and the mercy that he had received from his divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda. Now, this is a story of liberation. So, then, gradually, you know, he keeps going on Sankirtan, they get back to the temple, and after some time, he begins to pronounce things nicely, begins to give Bhagavatam class sometime. Very nice devotee. Actually, I'll explain about that in a second. He begins to give Bhagavatam class very nicely. He becomes the biggest book distributor. And eventually he goes to America to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And where I met him, you know, so he became a very good devotee, very great devotee. Where I met him was in New Orleans. He was friend of another friend of mine, Drumila, and Drumila introduced me to him, and he was going on Sankirtan distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And unfortunately, he developed some sort of throat cancer, and the cancer grew, and eventually he left his body surrounded by devotees chanting the holy name, and I guess went back to the spiritual world. So, wow. So Prabhupada saved me. You know, and that was his mantra. I mean, maybe not at the end. I mean, he was giving class and became quite educated and intelligent after some time. And so, that's the point. I mean, one simply has to get the mercy of Krishna's pure devotee, and you are saved. But, not that you get the mercy and don't do anything about it. So Pigpen got the mercy, or Rasada was his name. His initiated name. He got the mercy from Prabhupada, and he did something about it. He didn't just say, like, Prabhupada gave me the mercy, he liberated me. Whoa. Now he can do anything. Like, you hear people in certain religions, or bad interpretations of certain religions, saying that their founder, you know, suffered for their sins, and now they can do anything they want because he suffered for their sins. He gave him a pardon. No, if you want a pardon, you got to stop sinning. I mean, that's practical. I mean, even in the Christian religion, Jesus Christ says, be thou pure like your Father who art in heaven. You know, in other words, one has to make some endeavor. One gets the mercy is the opportunity, then it's up to you to take that opportunity and run with it. And then liberation is very easy. I mean, so look at what happened with that devotee. You know, from the lowest position to the highest position by the mercy of the pure devotee, and particularly because he preached Krishna consciousness. That's amazing. amazing story. I thought I'd share with you because I heard this before. While I was taking prasadam, I actually listened to Prabhupada memories. I'm actually a little Krishna conscious. So, anyway, so now we enter the next verse, which is also very important. This seventh chapter is filled with verses that are good to memorize. So this verse describes the people who don't come to Krishna consciousness. And see if you fall into any of these categories. Namam duskritino mudha prabhajante naradama mayaya pritalagyana asunbhava mashritam. Not. Mam unto me. Duskritina ha, miscreants, mudha ha, foolish, prabhajante surrender narada maha, lowest among mankind, mayaya, by the illusory energy of parda stolen. Yanaha, whose knowledge is Saram, demonic, Bhavam, nature, Ashuta, accepting. So there's four types of people described here. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is three, stolen by illusion, and partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. See if it actually fits you, any one of these four. So, Prabhupada explains them in depth. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that simply by surrendering oneself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so even if people who are like that get Krishna's mercy, they can actually become devotees. I mean, there's actually stories. Let's go back a little bit. I mean, just like this pig pen we just described. And he's also was the lowest among mankind, you know. And, of course, he didn't have much knowledge of his story by illusion. But sometimes you find people who just like puffed up with their knowledge, and atheists or demoniac people who surrender unto Krishna. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that simply by surrendering oneself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, one can surmount the stringent laws of material nature. At this point, a question arises, how is it that educated philosophers, scientists, businessmen, administrators, and all the leaders of ordinary men do not surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, the all-powerful Personality of Godhead? Mukti, or liberation from the laws of material nature, is sought by the leaders of mankind in different ways and with great plans and perseverance for a great many years and births. But if that liberation is possible by simply surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why don't these intelligent and hardworking leaders adopt this simple method? Good question. The Gita answers this question very frankly. Those really learned leaders of society, like Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, the Kumaras, Manu, Vyasa, Devala, Sita, Janaka, Palad, Bali, and later on Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Sri Chaitanya, and many others, who are faithful philosophers, politicians, educators, scientists, surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Person, the all-powerful authority. Those who are not actually philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, etc., but who pose themselves as such for material gain, do not accept the plan or path of the Supreme Lord. They have no idea of God. They simply manufacture their own worldly plans and consequently complicate the problems of material existence in their vain attempts to solve them. Because material energy, nature, is so powerful, it can resist the unauthorized plans of the atheists and baffle the knowledge of the planning commissions. The atheistic plan makers are described here by the word duskritinaha, or miscreants. So here Prabhupada is going to do an analysis of the word duskritina. So he's taking it apart. Kriti means one who has performed meritorious work. The atheist plan maker is sometimes very intelligent and meritorious also, because any gigantic plan, good or bad, must take intelligence to execute. But because the atheist brain is improperly utilized in opposing the plan of the Supreme Lord, the atheist plan maker is called duskriti. So kriti means meritorious. Dush sort of means the opposite, unmeritorious. Got it? Which indicates that his intelligence and efforts are misdirected. In the Gita, it is clearly mentioned that the material energy fully works, or works fully, under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It has no independent authority. It works as the shadow moves in accordance with the movements of the object. But still, material energy is very powerful, and the atheist, due to his godless temperament, cannot know how it works, nor can he know the plan of the Supreme Lord. Under illusion and the modes of passion and ignorance, all his plans are baffled, as in the case of Haranyakashipu, Aranyakashipu means guy who lights salt beds, but he tortured his son, who was a devotee, and ultimately was killed by an incarnation known as Nrisimha Bhagavan. And Ravan. Ravan means someone who makes people cry. Anyway, so Ravan also tried to kidnap Lord Ram's wife, and as a result, he ended up in trouble because he didn't believe in God, whose plans were smashed to dust. Although they were both maturely learned as scientists, philosophers, administrators, and educators, they were very intelligent. These Dushkritinas, or miscreants, are four different patterns as outlined below. Now, here Prabhupada is going to get into really explaining things. The Mudhas, means like an ass, are those who are grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burdens. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and so do not want to part with them from the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass. The humble beast is made to work very hard by his master. The ass does not really know for whom he works so hard day and night. He remains satisfied by filling his stomach with a bundle of grass, sleeping for a while under fear of being beaten by his master, and satisfying his sex appetite at the risk of being repeatedly kicked by the opposite party. That's actually what happens with donkeys or asses. Anyway, the ass sings poetry and philosophy sometimes. You can hear an ass brain. But this brain sound only disturbs others. This is the position of the foolish fruit of worker who does not know for whom he should work. He does not know that karma action is meant for yagya or sacrifice. So the point is, he's working day and night and to have a big house, to take care of his family, and, you know, nothing wrong with taking care of the family, but just like working day and night, his wife is also working, and basically, the only time he enjoys the house is when he's sleeping. And as Prabhupada would sometimes say, the real enjoyer of the house is the dog who's home all day long. And then he has to, in order to pay the bills, let's say for buying his car, what to speak of the house, of course. He has a big mortgage on the house that he has to pay it for like 30 years. And he finally pays it off by the time he's 65. And then he has to do a reverse mortgage and he loses the house and whatever later on. And then he buys these cars that are above his means. You know, like nowadays, you know, people buy these big, big trucks with big wheels or something like that. I mean, I have a friend who bought a truck, just a pickup truck, and it cost him $100,000. Wow. Of course, it has all the bells and whistles, and, you know, you can, I don't know what you can do. That's pretty expensive. When I was young, you'd buy a pickup truck for about $12,000, or even less. I remember buying one for like $9,000 when I was in Los Angeles working for the BVT. So, in other words, you need a nice car because you got to travel all that distance to work. And while you're traveling to work, you're caught in rush hour traffic. And then you come home at night, at like, what time, you know, 6 or 7, you grab something to eat and go to sleep. And, you know, there's sex life or something like that. And then your wife yells at you. And then you wake up the next morning and you start it all over again. And then on the weekends, you do things like, or the vacation, you do things like take the kids to Disneyland, spend $3,000 or $4,000 on a few days at Disneyland and swelter in the hot sun, long lines. The kids are screaming. Kids get sick. And that's your life. You think that's all life is about? Most often, those who work very hard day and night to clear the burden of self-created duties, is what Prabhupada said, say that they have no time to hear of the immortality of the living being. To such mudhas, material gains, which are destructible, are life's all in all, despite the fact that the mudhas enjoy only a very small fraction of the fruit of labor. In other words, having a car, a big truck, worth $100,000, wow, you could show it off to your friends. Sometimes they spend sleepless days and nights for fruit of gain, and although they may have ulcers or indigestion, they are satisfied with practically no food, or they're eating food that just blows them up like balloons. They are simply absorbed in working hard day and night for the benefit of illusory masters. Ignorant of their real master, the foolish workers waste their valuable time serving mammon. It means just like material mankind. Unfortunately, they never surrender to the Supreme Master of all masters, nor do they take time to hear of him from the proper sources. The swine who eat the night soil. Night soil, for those of you who don't know, is excrement. And the pigs do that. And if you've ever been to Vrindavan, you will see it. And if you've ever been to Vrindavan and you had to go out and leave yourself in the fields, you've got to keep a stick to beat the pigs from eating at an inappropriate time. So do not care for... So the pigs, they eat stool. Do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. And other people... In other words, different strokes for different folks. So one man's food is another man's poison. One animal's food is another animal's poison. Similarly, the foolish worker will untiringly continue to hear of the sense enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world advertising, but will have very little time to hear about the eternal living force that moves the material world. So how many people do we know that are like that? They're just like on the treadmill. So exactly like that. Like when I was young, we used to have these little animals at home. Not that little. We had hamsters and white mice and gerbils and God knows what other. And you keep them in this cage and there would be a wheel there. And all night long, unfortunately, they're generally nocturnal. They'd be doing their exercise in their gym. That was their gym. It's like we go to a particular gym, like in Hillsborough here, there's a Sportplex, and we're so happy to pay money to go to the Sportplex. And they have their gym. You know, they just do their running there. It's free. And so, but they're not getting anywhere. That's the point. You know, you just don't get anywhere. Like being in the material world is like on a treadmill. So that's like a mudha. Another class of duskriti, or miscreant, so hopefully you're not a mudha, is just work to eat. And, you know, mudha works to eat and sleep, and then sleeps to work and eats to work. You know, you get it. And he gets kicked all the time. Another class of duskriti or miscreant is called Naradama. Or the lowest of mankind, Nara means human being, Adama means lowest. Out of 8,400,000 different species of living beings, there are 400,000 human species. Out of these, there are numerous lower forms of human life that are mostly uncivilized. The civilized human beings are those who have regulated principles of social, political, and religious life. Those who are socially and politically developed but who have no religious principles must be considered Naradamas. Nor is religion without God religion, because the purpose of following religious principles is to know the supreme truth and man's relationship with it. In the Gita, the personality of Godhead clearly states there is no authority above him, and that he is the supreme truth. The civilized form of human life is meant for man's reviving the lost consciousness of his eternal relation with the supreme truth, the personality of God and Sri Krishna, who is all-powerful. Whoever loses this chance is classified as a Naradama. In other words, what your activities are simply animal activities. If you don't go beyond eating, sleeping, mating, defending, which are necessary, but that's everything, that's your goal of life, then you're Naradama. And so these terms, like Naradama, Mudha, we went before, they're not mutually exclusive. It's not that you're either a Mudha, either a Naradama, either a Maya, Pratyagana, or a Sutta. You can be all four, if you like. Look, four. We get information from revealed scriptures that when a baby is in the mother's womb, an extremely uncomfortable situation, he prays to God for deliverance and promises to worship him alone as soon as he gets out. To pray to God when he is in difficulty is a natural instinct in every living being, because he is eternally related with God. But after his deliverance, the child forgets the difficulties of birth and forgets his deliverer also, being influenced by Maya, the illusory energy. It's like that. You put in difficulty and you just pray, God, oh God, Krishna, save me. But then after that, you know, whenever there's trouble, you know, we take shelter of God. Otherwise, we just don't. It's the duty of the guardians of children to revive the divine consciousness dormant in them. The 10 processes of reformatory ceremonies are enjoined in the Manusmriti, which is the guide to religious principles are meant for reviving God consciousness in the system of Varnashram. However, no process is strictly followed now in any part of the world, and therefore 99.99% of the population is Naradama. Wow. So reformatory ceremonies means that there are certain things done at certain times of a person's life or during certain activities that help one dedicate that activity or that time of life to Krishna. That's all. It's a very simple thing. Like you have a name-giving ceremony when someone is born, and you give them Krishna's name. Or you have a ceremony when one starts to go to school, one takes initiation, when one graduates. I mean, even in the Western world, we have all sorts of ceremonies. I mean, in the religion that I was brought up in, we had sort of a samskara, which is what it's called. Samskara means basically impression. When I was 13, it was called a bar mitzvah. Of course, people didn't understand, at least I didn't understand the purpose of it. I thought it was just like, you know, some ritual we do, and you have a good time and a big party, and people give you presents. I thought, that's cool. Otherwise, I had no understanding. I mean, I read from the Bible, I understand that. Actually, the part of the Bible I read from was Genesis. That's like gene, genetic. That's the first part of the Bible, and probably would somebody say, in the beginning, there was darkness, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And that was the morning and evening of the first day. Anyway, I read it in Hebrew. I didn't read it in English because I used to read Hebrew. So anyway, so that was the religious era. But I had no inclination or no hint was there that it was actually part of dedicating my life to God. It was just something, you know, you do. Yeah, you like, you eat, you sleep, drink, and you go through the ceremony. But in the Vedic system, the samskaras are actually ceremonies that directly point out your vision, purpose in life. So Prabhupada says, when the whole population becomes Naradama, naturally all their so-called education is made null and void by the all-powerful energy of physical nature. According to the standard of the Gita, a learned man is he who sees on equal terms the learned Brahmin, the dog, the cow, the elephant, and the dog eater. In other words, you see the soul in everyone's body connected to Krishna, and everyone's equal. Maybe not the bodies are equal, but the souls are ultimately equal. That is the vision of the true devotee. Sri Nityananda Prabhu, who is the incarnation of Godhead, his divine master, delivered the typical Naradamas, the brothers, Jagai and Madhai, and showed how the mercy of a real devotee is bestowed upon the lowest of mankind. That's a similar story to that of Pigpen. These brothers, Jagan Madai, were previously actually from a high-class family, but they became degraded by bad association, and they were drunkards and did all sorts of things and hurt people. It's described that the extent of their bad karma was almost unlimited, and how they would have to suffer was almost unlimited. In fact, Madai, one of the brothers, tried to hurt Lord Nityananda, and he did hurt him. Threw a piece of a pot at him, and still they were forgiven by Lord Nityananda, and therefore Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forgave them, and they became great devotees of the Supreme Personality of God. But before that, they were Naradama, so there's hope for everybody. So the Naradama is condemned by the Personality of God, who is condemned, can again revive his spiritual consciousness only by the mercy of a devotee. That's the story of Pigpen again. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in propagating the Bhagavad Dharma or activities of the devotees, has recommended that people submissively hear the message of the Personality of Godhead. The essence of this message is Bhagavad Gita. The lowest amongst human beings can be delivered by this submissive hearing process only, but unfortunately, they even refuse to hear an oral reception to these messages, And what to speak of surrendering to the will of the Supreme Lord? Naradamas, or the lowest of mankind, willfully neglect the prime duty of the human being. The next class of rascals, Duskriti, is called Mayaya Pavitta Jnanaha. or those persons whose erudite knowledge has been nullified by the influence of the illusory material energy. They are mostly very learned fellows, great philosophers, poets, literati, scientists, etc. But the illusory energy misguides them, and therefore they disobey the Supreme Lord. There are a great number of Maya Pratijñas at the present moment, even among the scholars, amongst the scholars of the Bhagavad Gita. In the Gita, in plain and simple language, it is stated that Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is none equal to or greater than him. He is mentioned as the father of Brahma, the original father of all human beings. In fact, Sri Krishna is said to be not only the father of Brahma, but also the father of all species of life. He is the root of the impersonal Brahman and Paramatma. The super soul in every living entity is his plenary portion. That's God in the heart. He is the fountainhead of everything, and everyone is advised to surrender unto his lotus feet. Despite all these clear statements, the Mayaya Prahurita Jnana deride the personality of the Supreme Lord and consider him to be merely another human being. They do not know that the blessed form of human life is designed after the eternal and transcendental feature of the Supreme Lord. In other words, they're so intelligent, they think that they can figure things out by themselves, and they don't need to accept any other source of knowledge. Of course, we were talking about that before. This is called epistemology. Like, how do you know what you know? So, generally, the Mayaya Pavetajanas, they don't accept what we call a superior source of knowledge. They just think they can figure it out themselves, or it can be figured out by other scientists or philosophers or whatever. All the unauthorized interpretation, in other words, even they get the Gita, as Prabhupada is going to point out here, and they give an interpretation that is diametrically opposed to the actual message of the Gita, using the Gita to present their diametrically opposed presentation, which is ridiculous. All the unauthorized interpretations of the Gita by the class of Maya Pavitigana outside the purview of the Parambara system. Parambara system means the system of spiritual masters, the chain of the spiritual masters coming down from Krishna, are so many stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual understanding. Just like before I came to Prabhupada's Gita, I read so many other Gitas, and basically, they were all bogus. Because they all presented their own opinion in the name of the Bhagavad Gita. So I didn't really get any sort of understanding by reading those Bhagavad Gitas. You know, it sounded nice, but it was just like, well, you know, why is this book considered so great? The deluded interpreters do not surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, nor do they teach others to follow this principle. So because they're, in other words, they're just like puffed up, to use the expression, which we explained, with their own paltry intelligence or ability. And the last class of Duskriti, or rascals, is called Asuram, Bhava Mashrita, or those who are of demonic principles. This class is openly atheistic. The Maya Pratijñana is not openly atheistic. They just think, you know, we can figure things out. They may be considered to be agnostic, but not atheistic. Some of them, but these are people who are dedicated to disproving or trying to disprove the existence of God to people. Some of them argue the Supreme Lord can never descend upon this material world, but they are unable to give any tangible reasons as to why not. There are others who make him subordinate to the impersonal feature, although the opposite is declared in the Gita. Envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the atheist will present a number of illicit incarnations manufactured in the factory of his brain. Some of the atheists do that, not all of them. Such persons, whose very principle of life is to decry the personality of Godhead, cannot surrender into the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. You actually see people who are more dedicated to trying to prove that God doesn't exist, like dolphins, than devotees are dedicated to worshiping. I mean, I wish I had the same determination of that these atheists manifest, but to worship God. But they are so determined. I mean, practically every other sentence is about God. I mean, they're probably chanting the names of God more than most devotees. Sri Jamunacharya Alabhandaru of South India said, "Oh my Lord, You are unknowable to persons involved with atheistic principles, despite your uncommon qualities, features, and activities, despite your personalities being confirmed by all the revealed scriptures in the quality of goodness, and despite your being acknowledged by the famous authorities renowned for their depth of knowledge in the transcendental science and situated in the godly qualities. You know, people, these atheists, they're just so... And it's just illogical. As we mentioned before, if you study the cell, and I know many of you heard this argument from me before, if you study the cell, one cell in the human body, or one cell in the plant, for that matter, or any living entity, you'll see that it is almost infinitely complex. And it is impossible, even using the science of mathematics, you know, probability theory, for it to have come about by chance. Absolutely, positively impossible for one cell. What to speak of all these different types of cells that all work together. I don't remember how many different types of cells there are in the body, but you got the, you know, you got the muscle cell, heart cells, the brain cells, the nervous system cells, all these cells, and they're just like all coordinating things. And you have the immune system, you have the oxygenation system, you know, the red corpuscles. I mean, it's just amazing. Either on the individual cell level or going further down, even within the cell, each little protein machine that's in the cell, like the flagella in some of the cells, like the sperm cell has a little flagella, has a little propeller, and it spins at 100,000 revolutions per minute. And it never has to be oiled. Can you imagine? You have these little cells that are swinging, with a little propeller in the back, and another cell comes along with some oil, some 10W40 or something, squirts a little oil on it, okay. Or puts more gasoline in. I mean, how could these things happen without a designer? It's like someone has a boat with an outboard motor, and he says it just came about by chance. I just went outside one day and threw all the metal I had in my backyard up in the air, boop, and it came down, and I had this beautiful boat. Therefore, grossly foolish persons, one, two, the lowest of mankind, three, the deluded speculators, and four, the professed atheists, as above mentioned, never surrender to the lotus feet of the personality of God in spite of all scriptural and authoritative advice. There's a caveat. Unless they get the association of a devotee and take prasadam, hear the holy names, somehow or other, Krishna is so merciful that he can bring even those people to his lotus feet. But eventually, they have to make the conscious choice. It's not that Krishna drags them screaming and yelling from their illusion. No! I mean, just like I sometimes explain to people about going back to the spiritual world, and they say, well, can I go back to the spiritual world and not be pure? And I said, well, even if you went there, you wouldn't be happy. Because guess what? Everything or everyone there in the spiritual world is just centered on Krishna. They're not going to pay attention. You're just saying, hey, what about me? Like sometimes we do that. We're thinking, hey, what about me? Nobody's paying attention to me. It's just the deity's there on the altar. But here I am. Here I am. Guru Maharaj. No, anyway. So that's a fact. If you simply want to be the center, you'd be a miserable camper there in the spiritual world. Krishna would have to ask you, you know, what are you so miserable about? You want some antidepressant? Of course, they don't have antidepressant in the spiritual world because everyone is ecstatic. So tomorrow, we're going to talk about the four types of people that do approach Krishna. That's the next verse, text 16. So now we will take time to answer questions, hopefully. If anyone is ready, let me just take you off of mute. You are officially off of mute, forceful mute. Does anybody have any questions? Questions.
Hare Krishna Gurudev.
Hey, Rishikesh. Okay, what's the question?
My question is, I do have some kind of aspects of these four qualities which which you just described about people who don't surrender. And sometimes I have a mixture of both these qualities, you know. So I was just wondering, is this like a purification process where, you know, all these qualities which does not allow me to surrender to Krishna eventually goes away, washed away, and, you know, I become fully surrendered?
Yes, by the mercy of Krishna, if you want these qualities to go away, they will go away if you continue serving Krishna, pray to Krishna. But it's also important, I appreciate your being honest about these qualities. Actually, I don't see any bad qualities in you. But it's actually important for people to be introspective. I was having a very interesting talk today. Let me answer your question by relating this talk I had with a devotee in Europe. The devotee in Europe, and he's a really nice devotee, he was asking me, you know, why so many, as Prabhupada said, big biggies, you know, so many leaders or people leave. We were having this discussion because he knows a few of my disciples there who were prominent and then they had some spiritual trouble or whatever. And he also knows a lot of the past history of ISKCON in Europe. And, you know, there were really advanced devotees who had difficulty, you know, and even had very high positions, who bit the dust, to use an American expression. And we had many talks about this. So one of the things I mentioned, I mean, I'm getting to the point. One of the things I mentioned was that, as we mentioned last night, power corrupts. You know, when you get a position, you begin to identify with that position. And you don't understand that you're just a servant of a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord. You're not the position. You know, so that's also an upadhi. We identify with our position. Like Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur said that if we think of ourselves as gurus, we're gurus. It means a cow or an ass. So we always have to remember that we're all of us are just servants of servants of servants of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. And that's one thing that I told them. Now, there are several other explanations I gave, but the one that's important right now for your question is that I said that most of the time, the people I observe, they're not introspective. Now, introspective is an interesting word. You know, like spectacles. Here's my spectacles. That's glasses, for those of you who don't know English. So introspective means to look into yourself and really to see, admit to yourself. I mean, sometimes it gets really depressing. Like people think they're really advanced. That's a real big problem we have with people who are in Krishna consciousness. They really think that they're advanced and have realized their spiritual identity. I mean, wow. Amazing. I mean, that's just amazing. But, you know, we have this, conception of ourselves, overinflated conception of ourselves, I mean, because that's part of the false ego. Even in Krishna consciousness, we think, you know, I'm such a good devotee. Everyone loves me. The world will not exist without me. Things will not go on without me. You know, we have all these different ideas about ourselves. And we don't look into our own hearts and see our own anarthas or faults. And the sign of an advanced devotee is that an advanced devotee is finding fault in himself, even if he has no fault, like Bhakti Vinod Thakur. His famous poem, Gopinath. Gopinath, I'm a materialistic rascal. Please take this sinner weeping and weeping to your lotus feet. So that's a problem. We're not ready to admit to ourselves what to speak of others. And so we have, in a society of spiritualists, we have people who are becoming more impersonal as a result of that. You understand? Because they're living their image of themselves rather than as persons. Does everyone, hopefully everyone understands the logic. They have this image, and that's what they are, which is a static image, not an ecstatic image. And they're like robots just trying to fulfill that image. And I've seen that, you know, with the big devotees who had spiritual trouble. They were just living the image. So I explained to this devotee, I said, we have to be regular people. You know, I told this devotee, I said, the best praise that you can give me is that, you know, you're just a regular person. I appreciate that. You know, if someone says, oh, this is actually funny. Oh, my God, I hope I don't insult anybody. I mean, someone said, because I always say something before insulting someone. Someone said, you know, there was, all right, I'll get into it. There was this one devotee who had a lot of spiritual trouble, and his followers, even after he had spiritual trouble, say that whenever we saw him, he never touched the ground. You know, he was like, I'm not going to mention who it was, but anyway, he never touched the ground. Wow. And then he had spiritual trouble. I mean, I'm trying to understand. So one puts forth this image of himself or herself that is just like unbelievable. And then you got to live up to that image. That's even harder. Can you imagine living up to an image? You know, someone said to me, oh, they say it all the time, actually. You're a Nichiren devotee who came from the spiritual world, you know, and that you just like popped out of the local Vrindavan and Radharani sent you to preach Krishna. I mean, it's a good laugh for me. I said, you know, I'm a Nitya associate of Yamaraj or something like that. Anyway, so it's kind of laughable. You know, actually, if you praise someone and they're not really, the statement is actually you praise someone and they're not at that position, it's almost like an insult, Prabhupada said. And just like, I mean, it's like a sarcastic statement. Like when the sages were praising Prithu Maharaj before he exhibited his wonderful activities, Prabhupada said it wasn't appropriate before he did that. So people believe so many things about themselves and they have to live up to that image. It's horrible. Can you imagine living your whole life as a, you know, in a drama, as something that you're not? And we have many spiritualists who do that. You know, because of position, because of false prestige, because of a little taste for hearing and chanting. You know, Krishna gives them a little taste and they think, oh, I got it made. I mean, I even thought when I was a new devotee that I was a coward boy after 1 week in the Hare Krishna movement. And I had realized the self. After 1 week, you know, here I am, Siddhadeya. I'm ready for Raghunuga Bhakti after 1 week in the movement. You know, it's just like, what? But I believed it. I was firmly convinced. And the other brahmacharis were also firmly convinced. They were all coward boys. So here we were, the group of coward boys. And so, you know, sometimes we're convinced that we are something in the spiritual world. Guess what? Probably 90% of the cases, it ain't true. 90% of the cases. I mean, someone to say, oh, I'm a gopi in the spiritual world. And then we look at their spiritual identity through our spiritual microscope, because I have one here. You know, it's an electronic device I use to ascertain someone's spiritual identity. I actually look. There's a little hole here. I look here at someone, and it comes up. You know, it's just like, electronic glasses. You know, something comes up on the bottom, like a little writing, and it says, cow. And I don't have the heart to tell them that they're a cow in the spiritual world. Because they want to be something sexy. Cows are probably not too sexy, unless you happen to be a bull. I guess a cow is pretty sexy, but anyway. But the cow, everything is perfect in the spiritual world, whether you're a cow. So anyway, joking aside, which is hard for me, we actually have this conception of ourselves, and it's really just be a regular person. Let your hair down, let your sika down. And then if you're not a regular person, you can't have any friends. Because who's going to be friends with a facade? A mannequin. You know what a mannequin is? A mannequin is actually one of those things they have in the storefront that's, you know, they put women's dresses on and like that. You know, it's, you may think a mannequin is beautiful, but phew, it ain't. It's ain't. It's like, it's necrotic. I mean, it's like death. Anyway, thank God you don't understand that word. So anyway, so the point is, be the person, you know, just whatever you are, you know, if you're going to be a rascal, just admit it. What's the problem? You know, I'm a rascal, but at least I like chanting Hare Krishna at the same time, you know, so whatever. I'm not coming down from the spiritual world in Garuda. I did not come from Garuda. I came in the rain from whatever. Anyway. So, that's a hard thing. That's a hard thing. So, I admire you, Hrishikesh, for saying, yes, I see all these qualities in myself. And just keep that vision and you will go back to Godhead. And as soon as you stop seeing those qualities in yourself, then that's it. You won't go back to Godhead. You're going to just, like, bite the dust, the spiritual dust, or the material dust. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so it's good. Be introspective, admit it. I mean, I admire your ability to admit it. I mean, you're a real hero to admit it. The problem is I find people can't admit. They have so many excuses. You don't know who I actually am. It's your fault. And they want to blame others. Don't only blame others, you know, just blame yourself, you know, point your fingers at yourself and say, you know, I'm just, whatever, I'm just trying to be a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. I'm not God, and I ain't going to be, and I'm not going to be some great devotee. All I'm going to be is just serving a servant of a servant. Okay, any other questions real quickly? No? Yes, Radhasundari, you have a question. That's the last one for today.
I just want to ask Gurudev, how can we tackle with the person who... Can you hear me, Gurudev?
I can hear you perfectly. Yeah.
How can we talk to a person who doesn't believe in God? They believe that God exists, but they believe they don't have a form. And I always...
If they don't have a form, you don't talk to them. Just give them prasadam.
That's exactly what I do.
It doesn't help. I mean, the only time I would have an exchange with someone like that is if I was giving a lecture and they brought out the point, and then for the benefit of everybody else, I just have to devastate them.
Yeah, because it's just...
You know, otherwise, you know, waste your time. Give a fool good instruction, and they simply get angry. Upadesho vimarkanam sprakopaya vishantaya.
I just say to them, have you seen your grandparents, your great-great-grandparents, you know? But they still
won't accept that. They'll say, yes, my great-great-grandparent was a monkey, according to Darwin. Not a monkey, but somewhere between. Actually, Darwin never said we descended from the monkeys. He said we descended from a common ancestor. So devotees, when they go out and preach, they shouldn't say that we descended from, that Yarman says we descended from monkeys. We descended from a common ancestor, according to Darwin. So yes, your great-great-great-grandfather was, you know, basically a gorilla. So whatever, you know, whatever it was, a common ancestor, I don't really know. And then go even further back and you were a fish, according to Darwin, further back, and you were an amoeba. So basically, then you could say Krishna is the original amoeba. I don't know. Now, Krishna's the original person. Anyway, people are so foolish, I don't really waste time with them. I just give them prasadam and say goodbye. Unless I have to smash them because other people are listening. That's the same thing Prabhupada did. Prabhupada would really smash because people were listening, and Prabhupada wanted to train up his disciples how to argue. Okay, on that happy note, we have to go. Good night, everybody, or good morning for those of you in different places in the world. Om Tat Sat. Thanks a lot. Hari Bol.